ready to turn right?
Yeah.
Just lost you, rock on, wow!
Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City, and with me this week is Mr. Jody Havnot.
What's up, Kiss Army?
We also have Mr. Sonny Pooney.
How you doing out there, Kiss Army? This is number two. You know, got to hand it to Joe that he won the family feud. Congrats, Joe.
Oh, thank you very much. No, what did I call you online all week? Second place?
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. Now, normally there's just the three of us, but this week we have a special guest, author of the Encyclopedia of Kiss, Mr. Brett Weiss.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
What's up, Brett?
We're doing great. We're excited to have you on. Now, listen, I always have these three questions that I spit out. I've been doing them for about 3 or 4 years now, every time we have a guest on. So I got to ask you, favorite member of Kiss?
Ace Frehley.
Yoo-hoo!
Yay. Yeah.
By far, like, growing up, he was just by far my favorite, although I love them all.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Favorite record?
Oh, man, that's such a tough question to answer. It's probably a toss-up between Love Gun and Destroyer, but if someone put a gun to my head, I'd probably say Destroyer. I know that's kind of a predictable choice, but that's, you know, I was a kid then, so, you know, that's just how it is.
Yeah, yeah. What was your first Kiss concert? What year?
Well, as a kid, I was born in 1967, and so when Kiss was really big, 77, 78, around that time, I really didn't have the means to go. My parents wouldn't take me because they just didn't want to. This just wasn't their thing, and that would have required driving downtown to Dallas, and that's just something I guess they didn't want to do. But finally, in 1984, January 13th, 1984, I had a car and you know, all that good stuff, and so a bunch of us piled up and went to see them. January 13th, 1984, at the Dallas County Convention Center.
And so that would have been...
Animalize.
The Animalize tour.
Yeah, and... It was, you know, unfortunately, I never got to see him originally in the makeup and everything. And I've been going through my ticket stubs here, and I saw him in 84 and 85 a couple of times. But, yeah, so I didn't get a chance to see him in the makeup. And I finally did get to see him in 1996 when they reformed. And it pains me to this day that I never got to see him originally, you know, the full, you know, 77, 78, 79,
sure.
I would have sold my soul to go, but I just didn't have a way to do that. And when I first saw him, yeah, it was Vinnie Vincent, which was, you know, back then, it was interesting. Back then, you know, before social media, the internet and all that, you know, rumors just flew like crazy. And there was all these, even back then at the time, there was a rumor that Ace Frehley was going to rejoin the band. And so we were a little surprised to show up when he wasn't there. You know, we were convinced that, but anyway, so yeah.
So you had Vinny at your first show.
Yeah, so that must
have been earlier in 84. Yeah,
Earlier in 84. Look it up.
Yeah, January 13th, 84.
Sweet.
That is
so. Did Vinny do a really long, crazy guitar solo or what?
Yeah, it was a very screeching and loud guitar solo. And
All right. So you're going to be with us through the whole show. We're going to talk about your book.
Oh, yeah. So just for nitpicker, it was the Lick It Up tour. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, okay, good. All
yeah,
right.
Memories are kind of fuzzy from that. You know, I'm old. And memories are pretty fuzzy from that time. So, yeah, it was definitely the Lick It Up tour. And I remember I worked at a barbecue restaurant in 83. And, you know, towards the fall, you know, late 83, they started playing Lick It Up on the radio a lot. And I was just amazed by that because, you know, growing up, Kiss was hardly played at all on the radio. Very rarely. And so it was super exciting for me when I was 16 years old in 83 to hear Lick It Up on the radio a lot. And even more exciting when I actually got to go see him in concert early the next year after that.
Yeah, I still get excited when I hear him on the radio, even though mostly it's rock and roll all night. Man, there's a lot of news happening this week.
Podcast Rock City News.
The first thing that I want to bring up is, for those of you out there that are near up Rocket Fizz, where they have the Kiss Cola, has everybody here tried that or just me?
I have not.
I think it's just you.
Just you.
Me. Okay. Two more sodas got released. It's a Kiss Army root beer, and that of course has the Kiss Army logo on the bottle. And then there is another one that came out, which is like a cherry Coke or whatever, and it has the Rock and Roll Over label. And somebody posted pictures of them last night, and I thought they were fake. And they were like, "No, they're real." I was like, "Holy crap!"
So the key question would be: does the root beer have caffeine?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like me some root beer, but I don't want caffeine.
I have a feeling it's going to have the caffeine. Anyway, so you guys out there, if you're near a Rocket Fizz, man, go and buy some up and take a picture and put it on Podcast Rock City's group page. It'd be great to see that. Now, here's the really big news, okay? This week, Kiss Cruise announced that they're going to have a panel during the cruise. So while we're on the boat, they're going to have a panel of past Kiss people. Not necessarily – so let me just get into that. So we got Bruce Kulick, right?
Right.
We've got Bob Kulick. We have Big John Hart. We have Michael James Jackson, which is that's a big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
And Lydia Chris.
Cool.
So it's like an expo.
It's like an expo. So it's going to be like Kiss World is the theme, I guess. So I'm so surprised that Lydia is going to be on. Out of all of them, you know, because sometimes there's a little battle there. You guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems dangerous, right? I mean, do you tell Lydia, hey, you got to keep it Kiss positive, or do you just let her do what she's going to do?
I think by now everybody's heard stories or whatever, you know. And
well, I mean, she's a professional. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where when I was just like, holy crap, I cannot believe that Lydia is going to be on the boat. It's not going to be bad. It'll be good. She's very friendly and sweet. Jody and I had her on. She was very, like I said, friendly, nice, you know. She didn't really rip Kiss, did she, when we had her, Jody?
Nah, she was in a good mood that day. It was Mother's Day, too. So maybe
that's right. That's right.
I interviewed her one time, and she was really not just an email interview, but she was really nice and, you know, she's honest and forthcoming about, you know, the problems she and Peter had, but she just kind of says it, at least to me, in a kind of a matter-of-fact way, you know, without really trashing the band per se. She just sort of kind of tells it from her, you know, tells what happened from her perspective.
Right.
Yeah. I think that this is the first time, and this will be my, my fifth Kiss cruise. This will be the first one where I'm noticing that a lot of people that are going, wow, they finally get it. They finally get what we would like on this boat, you know. It's right. Basically a Kiss Expo on the water, you know. But here's the questions. What do you guys think the chances are that, man, there are so many members to different groups on this boat. So you've got the Big Rock Show, which is mostly Gene's solo tour band, right? They're going to be on the boat. You've got Bruce and Bob Kulick. So Bruce, you have the whole Revenge lineup on the boat now. You have Bob Kulick, who played on Paul's solo album. Okay. What do you guys, if you guys were going on the boat, Brett, have you ever been on the Kiss Cruise?
I have not, no.
You have not. Okay, so let's say you guys were going on the Kiss Cruise. What would you hope? Would you hope to see all of that, or would you be like, I just want to, let Bruce do something with his brother or whatever? Or would you just hope maybe Gene's going to do a solo set? Maybe Paul's going to do something with Bob? I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I really enjoy Unplugged, you know, when all six of them got together, you know, at the end of the performance, and you know, I like the mashup, you know, from different eras and stuff. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
What do you think, Sonny?
I would watch for anything on the itinerary that says special guest or surprise, because I've never been on a Kiss cruise, but I've been on a Monsters of Rock cruise. And I remember I'm like thinking on the way to the cruise, I'm like, all of the different Alice Cooper guitarists are on this cruise. And then they got together and did an Alice Cooper set without Alice.
Nice.
And that was all last minute. So that's what I would watch.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder, man, what are the chances of, like, you know, of the guys getting on stage with Bruce and doing, like, Unholy or, you know, a few different songs, you know? Of course, you know, they don't have to do anything where Paul sings because they don't need to push it. But, you know, Gene, they can do Domino, they can do Unholy, they could do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. That would be awesome. I remember when they first announced, you know, what was going on at the Kiss Cruise, you know, coming up, and one of the first things they announced was a Beatles cover band.
Well, they also have a Zeppelin one as well, so you can see the connection of Kiss World is connected with the Beatles, is connected with Led Zeppelin.
Hell yeah. I'd much rather see a Beatles tribute, a Led Zeppelin tribute, over Steel fucking Panther or any of those other bands they always seem to book, you know?
Well, I haven't seen Steel Panther, so I'm excited about that. Everybody keeps telling me it's a lot of fun. The I guess for me the thing is it still says even more to come. And now here's something that's really cool is apparently they're going to be doing autograph signings. I want to meet Michael James Jackson, man.
You got to wrangle an interview out of this dude.
Yeah, it would really be awesome. And, you know, Lydia, you know, the other three, you know, we've met Bruce. You know, we had John Hart on the show. We had Lydia on the show. You know, you've had Bob, right?
Yeah.
On Strange Ways. So, you know, this is, to me, though, this is going to be, I think it could get even more epic depending on what's happening. So, you know, they keep saying Kiss doesn't like to look back, but the fact that they're doing this is absolutely a celebration, you know. It's a Q&A, too. So, you know, the fact that they're going to be on there and getting asked questions, and it could get out of hand. And, you know, it could be, you know, it could be really great. You know, I we got 4 months to go. So we'll just, we got plane tickets today, so.
Right on.
But a different spin on it, right? This is a concentrated group of folks, and they know who bought all the tickets. So maybe reach out to that group of folks, the 3,000, 4,000 that bought tickets, and via email say, hey, we've got these four options. We have time to do one. Which of these options would you like to see with this group?
Sure. Sure, yeah. No, I get it, yeah. I really hope to see... I mean, I can't imagine that Bruce Kulick's going to be on that boat and not get up there and jam one song. It would make no sense. Maybe not in the makeup Kiss set, but certainly the Sail Away acoustic one, right?
Yeah.
Because it's going to be acoustic again. It's not going to be electric like it was the last 2 years, so... Yeah.
Maybe Meatloaf will be on the boat, and then Bruce and Bob will do like a Meatloaf set for you.
That would be awesome. I wouldn't complain about that, actually. I would love that. I love Meatloaf.
Yeah, I'm a Meatloaf fan, too.
Yeah, he really had a powerful, powerful voice, great writing.
And they could have Lisa sing the girl parts.
Yeah, so Lisa will be on the boat, too. So that means that she'll be doing stuff with Bruce. Man, this could get intense. Hopefully, I'm going to be able to get to all the places to see the things I want to see.
Right.
And I still haven't heard if we have any comedians. So I'm really still hoping that Courtney Cronin-Dold is going to be there. And, you know, the same comedians for the last cruise were perfect. So
they should get Craig Gass.
Well, yeah, Craig was on the last one, and
oh, was he?
Yeah, and he was cool. Great. Yeah, he was great, and you know, so we'll just have to wait. More to come, I guess. It's getting close. So, yeah. So I don't really have any more news, but that other stuff, that cruise stuff's pretty big. We'll stay tuned, and we'll see what else comes up.
Podcast Rock City, topic of the week. Yay!
Yeah! So Brett is with us today, and he is the author of the Encyclopedia of Kiss. And, you know, I'm glad that you're on because we really want to pick your brain. You know, I guess the first question would be kind of leading into this. How did you find out about Kiss? Was it an older brother, a neighbor? What made you go, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I can't recall there wasn't some aha moment where I remember seeing them for the very first time. And I think that's because I have a brother that's four years older than me, and he had a pretty massive record collection, and he was a big audiophile. And I believe he had a copy of Alive, and this would have been 75 when it was new. And I remember listening to Nothing to Lose on that and just being absolutely, I'm 8 years old. And I'm just blown away by it. And see, I grew up like when a lot of kids at school were listening to, you know, Casey and the Sunshine Band or Barry Manilow or whatever, you know, as I went through elementary, junior high and all that, you know, I'm listening to Rush and Mott the Hoople and AC/DC, Jethro Tull, Judas Priest, you know, full albums. You know, my brother was big on, you know, don't just pick out specific songs or listen to stuff on the radio, you know, listen to the full album and appreciate it. And he was a Kiss fan to some degree. He had Alive 2. Well, when I first listened to Alive, which it must have been 70, it must have been sometime in 75. I loved Alive, and then I went back and, you know, we'd go to Kmart every Friday with my parents, and I'd have my allowance and stuff, and I started buying their older records, you know, the first three, and that was sounded different, so much different to me from Alive. So an older fan might have grew up with the first three albums and then been blown away by Alive because it sounded so much more, you know, louder and more energetic and everything than the studio. But I was sort of the opposite. You know, I was weaned on Alive, and then I heard the earlier stuff, and I was kind of taken aback a little bit by just a little different sound, but I grew to love those albums as well.
I know.
And I'd stay up late with my brother watching, you know, the Midnight Special and all that. Kiss was great on there. And it always pissed me off that they never appeared on Saturday Night Live. And I could never figure out why that was. It seemed like they would have been a perfect fit. I remember the skit, you know, they did.
Yeah.
The
backstage skit. But it always, I just never could figure out why they weren't on there. But, you know, I was always alert to any, you know, any Kiss appearance that was going to be on TV or, you know, all that good stuff. So I was been a fan since it had to be 75.
Yeah, I used to do the same thing. I used to grab the TV guide every week it came out and mm-hmm. start scanning through it to see. I always get tripped up by Gene Simmons, the female actress that was.
Right, yeah. I remember they were on PM Magazine one time. Do you remember that show? It was like
an entertainment
news show. Well, my friend took a Polaroid, my best friend that lived next door to me, he took a Polaroid of the TV when they were on PM Magazine. And for some strange reason, just the way it turned out, it looked just like, it was a picture of Gene Simmons in full makeup and costume and everything. And I don't know if it was a clip or something of another, whatever it was. He took just a still, you know, Polaroid of that, and it looked like him getting out of a limo. And for some reason, just the way it was shaded or whatever. And so we took that picture to school the next day and told everybody at school that we met Gene Simmons in downtown Dallas because he was there for some performance or something. But anyway, so yeah, I was you know, obsessed with Kiss and whatever, Kiss anything, you know, I was buying the magazines. I couldn't afford a lot of the memorabilia, the dolls, the Kiss model kit and a lot of things. You know, I got like a dollar a week per allowance, so I had to save those for the albums. And I was also obsessed with the magazines, Circus, Hit Parader, and all that stuff. And I remember even buying some copies of Teen Beat, you know, just if Kiss was on the cover or whatever,
right,
just so I could read about maybe Ace being from Jindel for the thousandth time or whatever. but yeah, so anything and everything Kiss back then, I would just, you know, completely was obsessed with. My mom let me plaster pictures all over my bedroom walls, which was really cool. I mean, I grew up, you know, we were religious and went to church, you know, three times a week and all that, you know, the Bible Belt. But my parents never had any problem with me being a Kiss fan. They were totally cool with it. And my dad would even, one time I gave him some magazines and asked him if he could make photocopies of these pinups. And so like the full page pinups, and he made several stacks. He works at Bell Helicopter, you know, this big plant, and he went in and make several stacks of each band member. And I went around to school just passing, you know, fifth, sixth grade. I went around to school just passing those out to people.
That is awesome.
Like I was some kind of Kiss evangelist or something. And so, in, which was cool in elementary school, fifth, sixth grade, fourth grade. It was all great. But once I got into junior high, suddenly, you know, you start hearing that Kiss sucks. And, you know, this would have been the early 80s. And, you know, it kind of changed at that point, but it was still cool to like Kiss in elementary, but junior high. But I kept liking them anyway, and took a lot of slings and arrows for that.
Yeah, that's always the badge of courage, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, right. Let me ask you this: did you go through a period where you stopped listening to them? A lot of people I find went through, like, they followed them and followed them and followed them, and all of a sudden their music interest changed a little, and then all right. of a sudden they got back together, and I was like, oh, I remember why I love this, and.
Right.
Did you have the same experience?
I never completely stopped, but there were a couple of dips. Okay, so what happened was when the solo albums came out, absolutely loved Ace, Gene, and Paul, and predictably, I wasn't a huge fan of the Peter Criss one. I thought it was okay, but I really wanted to hear stuff like Nothing to Lose and Hard Luck Woman and that kind of thing instead of, you know, the stuff he was influenced when he was a kid in the 50s. And that just wasn't my thing. So, but I love the solo albums. I love Dynasty too. I thought that was great. I thought that was just a little different kind of Kiss sound. And I was perfectly fine with it. I thought, you know, Sure Know Something, I Was Made for Loving You. I love all those songs on there. But then when Double Platinum came out, that was the first Kiss album I thought, well, I don't really need that. Because I've got all those songs, you know, Strutter 78 is not really, you know, on my limited income, you know, dollar, $2, whatever, allowance and all that. I just figured I didn't need that. So that was sort of the first chink of the armor as far as not buying Kiss records. And I was confused at the time by The Elder. That just kind of, I was a little bit taken aback by that and didn't really know what to make of it. I didn't like that they weren't on the cover. I didn't quite understand what they were going for. You know, I'm just a kid, and I'm wanting, you know, Tomorrow and Tonight and, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. Shocked me, and I'm hearing The Elder, and I didn't know what to make of it. And Unmasked, you know, I got those records, and I listened to them, Unmasked. I kind of liked Unmasked. I thought it was a good album. I thought it was a little light for my taste, but I thought it was still a pretty solid record. And, you know, and then I absolutely loved Creatures in the Night. So I was still listening to Kiss all through them, but there was a little dip where The Elder and Unmasked was concerned. And I absolutely hated the Unmasked cover, where they basically insult themselves with that comic strip cover. You know, I still say they stink or whatever, you know, at the end of that comic strip cover. And I thought, that's just so insulting to me as a fan, because I hear that enough at school. You know, I don't want to hear it from Kiss themselves.
Right, right.
And so there was a little dip there, but then absolutely loved Creatures of the Night. I mean, I remember the first time I heard it, I was with some friends. We were in Fort Worth bowling, and it was getting close to midnight, and we wanted to make a jaunt across town to go catch a Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Midnight Movies, and which would have been about a 20-minute drive. And so we throw on this friend of mine, and he had a Trans Am that was like Burt Reynolds in Smoking the Bandit.
Sweet.
He puts in Creatures of the Night had just come out. He puts it in, and, you know, the title track, and I'm just, you know, after sort of suffering, I guess, is not really the best word, but sort of being Unmasked and The Elder, you know, just sort of. Of course, those are two albums I really like now, but at the time I was kind of meh on them, I should say. But
sure.
But when he put in Creatures of the Night, this was 82, and I didn't quite have a car yet, so I was riding with friends, and he put that on, and I was just floored, just blown away. And then Lick It Up, I absolutely loved. That's when I had gotten a job by that point, and like I said, we'd gone to that concert. I bought Alive, I bought Asylum, I bought Crazy Nights, Hot in the Shade. I kept up with them, and I kept buying all those albums. And through the 80s, maybe the albums weren't as strong as the ones in the 70s, at least in my opinion, but I thought there was a lot of great songs on some of those albums. Like, for example, on Animalize, Thrills in the Night is one of my favorite Kiss songs. I think that's just a fantastic song. So I pretty much listened to them all through, you know, into the 80s. And so I've never not been a Kiss fan.
All right! Well, that's cool. So, you know, as a kid, you're a Kiss fan. You graduate high school, right? Did you go to college?
I was a horrible student in high school. You know, I went to I counted up one time. I went to around 80 full, you know, like arena style concerts when I was in high school. So when I was 16, 17, and 18 years old, I had a job where I worked about 30 hours a week, and I went to concerts all the time. I mean, you know, the Defenders of the Faith, Judas Priest tour. I saw Dio in his prime. I saw Iron Maiden in their prime. All these great bands, Journey, you know, every band you could possibly think of that was big in the 80s. A lot of metal, a lot of the pop stuff. Saw Cyndi Lauper, the Bangles, you know, just all these great concerts. And so that was my focus, my job, my concert going, my friends. In school, I would just kind of go there and kind of sleep a little bit. And I was a terrible student. So after high school, I sort of just had a job. I was delivering copier machines, of all things, just driving around Dallas-Fort Worth in a bobtail truck delivering copiers. That gave me plenty of time to listen to the radio and be outside and stuff. So that was okay. But after a while, I sort of decided to get serious, and I've always been a big reader, so I've always liked books and reading and stuff, but somehow that didn't translate to liking school. But I took some business courses, you know, just went to a junior college for a couple of years, took a bunch of business courses, and then me and my brother-in-law opened a couple of comic book stores in the early 90s in the Fort Worth area. So that's what I did in the 90s. And then after that, after we went our separate ways, I worked at Walden Books, and then quit my job at Walden Books after a few years to start writing full time. So that
now was... you see, this is where I was trying to figure out where the writing came in. That's why I asked, did you go to college?
Yeah.
I was going to say, was it for, you know, journalism, or was it for?
Right.
So you like you said, you liked reading.
Yeah, I've always loved Stephen King and comic books, and even like reference guys. You know, I grew up reading, you know, obsessed with the Guinness Book of World Records, and you know, my parents' encyclopedia sets and all that stuff, and just, you know, whatever I read everything I could get my hands on growing up. I was just a big fan of reading, so I was sort of literate, but just not with school for some reason. And so I got serious about business, but it was for business courses, because my brother-in-law and I wanted to open a comic book store, which we turned into two. And so while I was working at Walden Books, that same brother-in-law I had a comic book store with, he sent me like a sort of a job listing for this company called the All Game Guide. Or it was the company was the All Media Guide. The website was the All Game Guide. And this website was looking for writers to write reviews and descriptions of video games. I mean, everything from the very beginning, the Odyssey, the Atari, the ColecoVision and Television, to the present, which back then was, you know, whatever, the PlayStation or even before
right.
that. So, yeah. But it was an online database that wanted everything, like literally every single game for every. So plenty of work to keep me busy for years. So I did that full time. I was a writer and editor for the All Game Guide and did some other freelance writing. So I did that for a pretty good while. Until 9/11 happened, and you know, the terrorist attacks put a big damper on industry in the United States. Businesses, you know, there was a downturn with a lot of businesses, and it hurt the publishing industry, just like, you know, virtually every other industry. And so they made some decisions, and they let go all their off-site writers. Everybody that didn't work there in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where the company was, they let go. So I was out of a dream job. And so my friend had a garage door company, and I told him about the problem. I said, man, I just got laid off from this great job I love that let me, you know, take my kids to school. I could work at home, so I could raise my kids, take them to school, and do all that good stuff. And, you know, I worked early in the mornings or when they napped or when they were at their nana's or whatever. So I had a really good setup until that happened. And so he said, why don't you just work for me at, garage door company? And I was like, huh? You know, what? Because that didn't sound like anything I was interested in. But all I had to do was go out on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, when my mom kept the kids, and I would just do cold calls, and I would do sales calls. And so he would pay me for each day, plus he would pay me commission. And so I made a pretty decent salary just working 2 days a week, plus I could spend the rest of the time writing. So I went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2006, and I met an editor with McFarlane Publishers. And I got to talking to them about their different reference books and stuff. And I gave them my business card. And they actually emailed me when I got back home and asked if I had any good book ideas. And I said, actually, I do have a good buck idea. And so I did basically what All Game Guide was doing online. I decided to do that in book form. So my first book, which actually just the other day, I celebrated the 10th anniversary of my first book. It's Classic Home Video Games, 1972 through 1984. And it's a full guide to the Atari 2600, Intellivision, ColecoVision, all those consoles that came out during that era. So it's like an encyclopedia for retro gaming, which, you know, at that time, 10 years ago, there weren't very many books on video games, you know, on retro gaming. But, you know, now that's exploded in the last decade. So at the time, it was, you know, kind of a big deal to have this, you know, actual publisher, you know, do a book on retro gaming. You know, it was a nice hardcover, like a textbook. So, and it was actually McFarlane's. Now they have, you know, a couple of hundred video game books, but that was McFarlane Publishers. That was their first video game book. So I guess I was a little ahead of the curve in that sense. And, you know, retro gaming has boomed like crazy in the last 10 years. 10 years ago was when the Angry Video Game Nerd got popular. It's when Nintendo added the Wii Shop channel and King of Kong, the, you know, mainstream movies, you know,
right.
Donkey Kong. You know, who would have thought a Donkey Kong competition would be in, you know, the Cineplex, you know, all over the country. So last decade, retro gaming has really taken off.
Yeah, this all opened up the door for mm-hmm. you. So how many years passed before you got to the Encyclopedia of KISS?
Podcast Rock City.
Yeah!
It's too loud or too old.
About 4 years ago, I sort of reignited my KISS fandom, and I started reading all the KISS biographies, and I started reading just all the KISS books, all the biographies, and KISS and Sell, plus KISS Hotter Than Hell by Paul Elliott. Every KISS book I could find, I just got kind of, for some reason, or I think it was... I'm not sure what started me along that line. It might have been Nothing to Lose. That's a great book. Anyway, so, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, I started just reading KISS books, and it occurred to me, you know, there's a lot of KISS books, but no one has ever done a KISS encyclopedia. I mean, there was an obscure, small Japanese encyclopedia in the late 70s that's really rare now, but that doesn't really count, I don't think. No one has ever done a full-blown KISS encyclopedia. The Grateful Dead, the Stones... You know, all the big iconic bands, the Beatles, obviously, Elvis, all these big iconic bands that everyone's heard of has a full-blown encyclopedia. You know, A through Z, you can look up all their songs, all their albums, all their big moments, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But there's nothing like this. And I researched it, and I'd never remember seeing a KISS encyclopedia, and I thought, well, this is crazy. I can't believe KISS doesn't have an encyclopedia, so I'm just gonna write one. And so I contacted McFarlane, which is the publisher of my Classic Home Video Games books, there's three of those now, the Classic Home Video Games books. And I just presented them, you know, there's never been... See, publishers really like when you can fill a niche in the market where you have a popular subject, but it's a unique idea for that particular subject.
Right.
And they were really intrigued by the idea that there had never been a KISS encyclopedia before. So I sort of laid out what I was going to do. You know, include all the girlfriends, the family, you know, the family members, the tours, the merchandise, the, you know, the famous moments, the infamous moments, you know, the Peter Criss imposter, the TV movie appearances, you know, all these different things, get all that stuff with my sort of perspective and spin on it and, you know, put it in one book. And so that's, they loved the idea. They said they, you know, at their weekly meeting, it was unanimous. They thought this was just a no-brainer, you know, a popular band like KISS. And with their, at the time, you know, their 40th anniversary was coming up, and the
right.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame helped out and everything. And so, yeah, it was just, I was very pleased that they liked the idea. And I kind of thought they would, because it just seemed like a gap that needed to be filled.
Sure.
And, you know, so, but yeah, so, and, you know, my interest in reading growing up really helped because, you know, I grew up liking reference books anyway. And so an encyclopedia was sort of a natural for me to write.
Absolutely. So let's get into the book. When we have people on that have written books, and we've had a few, usually the question that I like to ask is, give us something, give us a few things, if there is anything, that you discovered doing your research that you never knew but blew your mind.
Well, I was a little, I'd kind of heard a little something about the Kiss imposter. About the Peter Criss imposter.
Right.
But really researching that and the television appearance, you know, where the guy was confronted and everything. And that was pretty startling. And then some of the stuff about Vinnie Vincent, just how kind of off the rails he was. And, you know, his ex-wives, you know, just some, that was kind of strange. And I read more deeply into Gene Simmons' past. You know, we've all heard that he's from Israel and this and that. But just to read about and just to discover, and, you know, I watched, to research the book, obviously I read other books, I collected all this information, I looked online, et cetera, but a lot of what I did was listen to interviews. And just, you know, the heartfelt, the depth of the reason why Gene Simmons is so patriotic, the reason why he loves America so much is because he came from nothing. And, you know, he talks about going to grocery stores for the first time, about, you know, their old house having bullet holes, and he had never seen toilet paper. He didn't even know what toothpaste was till he came to America, you know, all this stuff. Just the depth of it, you know, if you go to a Kiss show and you think they're a little cheesy with their patriotism, you know, you get a good sense of why. Just because, you know, there's so many things we take for granted that Gene Dutton. And I love what a comic book nerd Gene Simmons is. You know, he can tell you all the, you know, inkers and artists and writers of, you know, Marvel Comics of the 60s and 70s. He's a walking encyclopedia. They're my favorite, you know, Kiss and Ozzy are my two favorite rock and roll acts. And just to sit here and research and write a book about Kiss is sort of a, you know, if you'd have told my, you know, 10-year-old self that one day I'd be writing a book about Kiss, you know, I'd be pretty shocked and excited. But, yeah, so there's a lot of, and, you know, Ace Frehley being named Punky, I didn't really know that before, you know. His band nickname during the mid to late 60s was Punky, which I'm pretty glad he didn't stick with.
Yeah.
But, and one thing I found out, so the old Kiss radio, the transistor radio that came out
right,
in the late
right.
70s, to me, you know, I guess having older siblings and stuff, I knew the radio didn't play Kiss, and I knew a radio, you know, any kind of radio, even if they were Kiss was on the cover, wasn't going to play Kiss. Well, apparently, a lot of fans in the late 70s who bought that radio thought they were going to turn it on and hear Kiss songs, you know, that old transistor radio. So that was a lot of sort of fan perspectives was pretty interesting to find out as I researched the book.
I remember seeing the commercial for the Kiss radio and the ads, and I thought when you turned it on, you were going to hear Kiss.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I'm a little younger than you. I was born in 1970, so I was probably easier duped, you know. Although they didn't really say, you know, this is, you turn it on, you hear Kiss, you know. But
They might have implied it, maybe.
Totally. Yeah, sure. Sure, the Kiss radio is like a Kiss magazine. Well, Sonny, you there, Sonny?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you got any questions you want to ask?
You said you read a lot of these books. Were you worried about, like, you're going to end up repeating some of the stuff that's already out there. So I guess you were more interested in just putting your own spin on it, not worried about repeating stuff?
Well, with an encyclopedia, I mean, my goal was to be completely exhaustive. So, yes, we know Gene was from Israel, so that's going to be in there. And, you know, and that information is elsewhere. But I dug up a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily appear in other books, like their TV appearance, you know, just really obscure TV appearances. And, like, with each song, for most of the songs and albums, I give my opinion of those albums. And so that is, you know, unique to this book, is sort of my opinion on a lot. Some of the people have said, you know, I don't really want, you know, an encyclopedia. I don't expect an encyclopedia to have, you know, biased information or not information, but opinions. You know, they didn't. That was kind of surprising to them that, you know, my opinion of the albums and the band members and all that stuff is in it. But one reason I included that was to give the book some personality, plus to so it's just not a dry thing. You know, just not facts. You know, I wanted more to it than that. So you get a lot of conflicting stories. You know, Paul will say one thing, Gene will say another. A fan will say another, a family member will say another. So you've got, you know, like a particular event that happened. Like, let's say with Mark St. John, apparently he was pretty unhappy with the way he was treated, but you wouldn't necessarily hear that from, you know, you wouldn't hear that as, you know, Paul and Gene probably thought they treated him fine, but he saw it a different way. And so what I did was I researched exhaustively. This book took about 2 years, and I researched it exhaustively to find the best possible, you know, getting to the source as much as possible. And then I would present in some instances where there's no definitive answer, I would give both sides of the story. So, you know. So
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's not just a repeat of stuff everybody knows, but things everybody knows, like, you know, Ace's red shoe and orange shoe, you know, that has to be in there because it's, you know, it's part of Kiss lore.
Right.
But at the same time, there's a lot of really, really obscure stuff in here, too.
Yeah, I mean, you went as far as to put us in there. That's pretty obscure.
Yeah. Jody, before you ever messaged me, Brett, Jody messaged me one time, and he goes, man, did you know that our podcast is in the Encyclopedia of Kiss? I was like, get the hell out of here.
I was saying before we started recording, I was saying, you know, one thing about this book, I wanted it to be relevant to, you know, younger readers or to modern readers or whatever, that it's got things they can identify with and relate to. You know, they may not have grown up, you know, being blown away by nothing, you know, by Alive and just being floored by Nothing to Lose. They might be, you know, fans that have only heard the current incarnation of the band. So I want to make sure to you know, include a lot of sort of modern phenomena regarding Kiss, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing that I could say in the past, I mean, when I was a kid, I can remember there maybe being like, I don't know, maybe 5 books, you know, yeah. the couple paperbacks, then that one Kiss where I can't think of the name of it, but it was like the Untold or Unauthorized story. And that was, they were pictured from like a Dynasty shoot, and then maybe a couple more. But
there's a paperback by John Swenson. He wrote a mass market paperback.
Yeah.
And that book shortly came out. That came out shortly after Robert Duncan. Robert Duncan wrote the first Kiss book, and that was just called Kiss. And that book sold over 400,000 copies.
Wow.
Which is just, you know, that's an insane amount for, you know, just a book that's not really necessarily, I mean, and it's not, you know, Paul Stanley's book, you know, he's all over the place, you know, promoting it and everything, and it's him, so he's obviously going to sell tons of copies. But just, you know, Robert Duncan, who nobody had heard of at the time, I guess, and just puts out this book, that just shows you how big Kiss was back then and how big print was, you know, in the late 70s.
Totally.
So, yeah, there was just a handful of books. During their peak, there were just a handful of books about the band.
Yeah. It seems like every time I go on Facebook now, somebody else is writing a book. And they're, and you know, it's you know, Julian from FAQ has written a few, and yours, and then apparently there's a few photographers now. I've been seeing them as well, where they're putting out books where they took pictures of Kiss and in concert and all these other things, and I'm like, man, you know, it's really cool. It's really cool that this is coming out, because I don't know why it didn't happen in the first run, you know? And
I think part of it is just, I think it was just sort of a continuing disrespect of the band because of the makeup and the stage show and everything. I mean, what other band has, except for maybe the Grateful Dead, has been so freaking, you know, through the 70s, were so freaking popular, yet you never heard them on the radio, you know? The Dead is probably the only equivalent where, I mean, when I was a kid, the first Kiss song I heard on the radio was on my mom's station, and it was Beth, you know.
Yeah.
And because see, in Dallas Fort Worth in the 70s and 80s, huge radio market. I mean, there were record companies here in Dallas. There's a documentary called When Dallas Rocked, which is absolutely fascinating. It's about where the band, what clubs the bands hang out when they would come here. It's about the Zoo and Q102, just these big radio stations. Everything was great about Dallas-Fort Worth radio in the 70s and early 80s, except for the fact that until Lick It Up came along, they were just rarely on the radio. The Dallas stations just had a big, huge bias against Kiss. It was just ridiculous. So I think the lack of books, you know, during the prime, I think that was just more of more disrespect.
Yeah. Plus, they hadn't been around that long. You know what I mean? They'd only been around for a couple of years when the Swenson book came out and the Duncan, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe there just wasn't enough to talk about.
you would think 78, 79, and 80, you know, there would be, you know, some nice, big, full color. You know, there were a few. I mean, Chip Rock Dayton, I can't remember when that book came out, but anyway, few and far between for the Kiss books. But yeah, now, there's a lot of self-published now. One thing about Encyclopedia of Kiss, it is by a publisher that's been around for decades, McFarlane, so that's one thing. You know, and I have nothing against self-publishing. I've written a couple of self-published books, but just a distinction there.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So people can go to Amazon and get the book. You have a website as well, right?
Yeah, my website is brettweisswords.com. It's brettweisswords.com. That has links to all the books, and including the Kiss book, and it's got, you know, some links to my other writings and stuff. I mean, I'm still writing all the time for different magazines and newspapers and stuff.
That's amazing. Okay, so if you guys haven't purchased this book, go, you know, get online and pick it up. I was going through my stuff, and Sonny was going through his stuff, and he's like, we were just talking about it, and he was like, I don't think I have that one either, so I'm going to go on after we get done here and purchase it, and then I'll read it and send you my message on what I think of the book.
Oh, cool. Well, on Amazon, if you click on the cover, you can read the first few pages, so it'll show you, it has the preface and the forward and stuff, so you'll see, it's got like a preface and a little mini history of the band, so you can read the first few pages, including sort of my background with Kiss and everything, and the first few pages of entry, so you can kind of see what the book is all about.
That's awesome.
Keep it locked on Podcast Rock City.
Before we get done here, I had just a couple more questions.
Sure.
So, have you thought about doing any other kind of Kiss book, or was that your one main one and you feel like you did?
Well, it's kind of funny that you asked that, because what happened was, my next idea for a Kiss book was stories from fans, and I kind of had that in the back burner, and then I saw online that someone else had that idea. Now, I don't know if that book was ever published or not.
I think I know that guy.
It's so aggravating.
Wasn't that your idea, Joe?
I started on something like this.
Okay.
What I started doing was, I had on our website, I started telling people, go on this thing, you can fill out this form and write, you know, your story. And
so that was you.
No, that was me a couple years ago. The new thing has nothing to do with me. I couldn't follow up enough, you know.
Uh-huh.
I really wanted to do that. I thought it would be great to hear the Kiss Army stories, you know.
Yeah.
Besides that, so one other thing, last thing. You know, being a lifelong Kiss fan, you know, you hear all the stories and you follow the news. How much longer do you think Kiss has? And B, how would you like to see him go out?
I figure they probably have another year. It seems like Paul's voice is getting a little wore out. I think Gene, just the stuff I've seen online of his solo band, wow, I think they sound pretty good. So I don't know what's going to happen with, you know, long term with that. But I think it's Kiss with Paul and Gene probably has another year or so. After that, you know, I've heard him talking about continuing with, you know, all four new members with the same makeup and everything. I don't have anything against Paul and Gene for doing that, because, you know, it's their baby. It's a free country, capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. But that would seem, I mean, I've seen some really good Kiss cover bands. And just because it would be the official Kiss, and that would just be a really good cover band, probably, to me. And I wouldn't pay big bucks to see a really good cover band.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, I get it.
But at the same time, you know, and the current Kiss, I mean, I'm going to go see them in September when they come to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I saw them in Oklahoma recently. You know, that's the last time I had seen Kiss up until just recently when I saw them in Oklahoma was 1996 with the reunion. Yeah, and I hadn't seen him since then, just for different reasons. Got married, had kids, and all that good stuff. And my kids have recently gone to college and everything. So we got empty nesters going on. So going to more concerts these days again.
Awesome.
Like what I did when I was young. So, but yeah, going to see. I'm totally cool with. I kind of wish. To me, it's a little weird seeing Tommy Thayer as Ace, because he's not, his personality and his you know, Tommy Thayer is sort of a boy. I think he's cool. He's a great guy, good person, but he's not Ace, and he's sort of a Boy Scout. And, I mean, he's just a straight arrow compared to Ace. And it just seems a little weird him playing this loopy spaceman character. He's a fine guitarist. That's a little odd to me, but I still watch him, and I think he does a good job. You know, he's a good guitarist, no doubt. Eric Singer looks a little odd in the kids. You know, he didn't quite fit the makeup, at least to, you know, just because I grew up, you know, with the original four, and it's just a little odd to see him in the same makeup. And I probably, like Eddie Trunk, I probably would have liked them to develop new characters. But, you know, that's just, you know, a longtime fan. Paul and Gene knows where the money is, you know, and that's with the four iconic, you know, characters. And I don't begrudge them that at all, you know.
Sure, but, absolutely. So you're not a basher.
Oh, not at all. No. Yeah. Life's too short.
Amen.
You are right about that. Well, listen, man, thank you very much for coming on. We really appreciate it. This was fun.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun.
You've had a very interesting, you know, life leading up to here. It's just so amazing how it not only did things, and I'm not going to say they fell in line for you, because obviously it never works that way, but it's cool that they wound up getting you where you wanted to go.
Yeah, everything seemed to work out okay. I goofed off the first 20 years or so of my life, but after that, things sort of fell into place.
Yeah, I say that about the first 46 of my life. Hopefully everything's going to fall into place starting tomorrow.
Well, good luck with that. But again, if anybody wants to find my Twitter, Facebook, all that, just go to brettweisswords.com. It's brettweisswords.com. And you can find all kinds of good stuff. One thing, I'm working on we were talking about, you know, Kiss stories from fans. I'm working on a Super Nintendo book right now that's going to have a lot of stories about, you know, playing video games in the 90s from Super Nintendo fans. So
that'll be cool.
Yeah, that's kind of what got me thinking about, you know, doing a story of a book of Kiss fans. But apparently someone else is doing that, so I don't know.
Well, we'll have to take a look at it. We'll have to take a look at theirs and then maybe do our own.
Right. do a better one.
Yeah.
With a real publisher.
Yeah. Right.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it. And I had a question for you, okay? So today I was at the flea market out here in Atlanta. Or actually, it's in Ackworth, Georgia. It's like a small little town. And mm-hmm. I was hunting. I found about four different places that had old Atari games. And for the life of me, I cannot find Montezuma's Revenge, which is...
Montezuma's Revenge, that's a really cool one.
I didn't even know they had that on Atari. I used to play that on, like, the Apple IIc and shit.
Oh, really? Revenge, man. I had that, and I played it to death. To me, it was like a better, well, I don't know if it was a better Pitfall, you know?
Totally.
I liked getting the keys and opening the doors and everything.
Yeah.
I really like that. But, you know, online, it's so hard to find, like, $40-$50 for that game now.
Yeah, it's pretty obscure, you know, and it has that, it's hard to find, plus it's really good, so a lot of people, you know, relatively speaking, want that game, so it drives the price up for sure.
I'll tell you another game that I had, and then I'll let you go, because I know you're probably busy, but I sent away all my Kool-Aid wrappers, man. The Kool-Aid Man game?
Kool-Aid Man, yeah.
Where all these things would come down and, like, you had Kool-Aid and they would dip their straws and try to drink all your Kool-Aid.
Right.
Holy crap. I was like, I used to love this game. I would play for hours, man. I still have my, like, at my house, when you walk in, I literally have, you know those TV stands that are basically like cubes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have Atari 2600. My 5200 I just sold. Because I can't, the controllers never really click to work.
Yeah, you have to, people make refurbished ones, and you can get the Wico command control and stuff. So there's ways to play it. But yeah, just the original controllers are pretty fragile and not centering and everything.
But I have, I have it all, man. If there's a game system, it's just the funniest thing because I work at a music store that has a pawn shop built into it. And people bring these things in, and I'm always like, I want that, buy it, and then I'll buy it.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're definitely going to need to look at my website because I've got basically an encyclopedia set that covers everything from Atari and before that all the way up to Sega Genesis. So
that is pretty cool.
Hey, Brett, just on the KISS subject, what did you think of have you seen the KISS Psycho Circus game on the Dreamcast?
I've never actually played that. I have a copy of it, but I've never bothered to play it.
it's not worth playing.
Yeah, some people will say it's kind of decent-ish, but nobody's ever said it's really great.
Right.
I thought it sucked.
That's funny. That's another thing. There's hardly any KISS video games, and from what I understand, Gene is not a video game fan at all, and I think that's why.
Yeah, they had the pinball for Sega.
Well, no, there's a PlayStation, and it doesn't even have KISS music in it.
No, it had them talking, Paul and Gene, a little bit of talking, and then guitar riffs, kind of like Bill and Ted, you know.
Yeah, right.
But other than that, anyway. All right. Well, listen, we're gonna let you go, and I appreciate it, man.
Oh, you bet, guys. Anytime. Take care.
Yep. All right, Brett.
Thanks, Brett.
All right, bye-bye.
Talk to y'all later.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Podcast Rock City.
Yeah! All right, so, hey, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I know we did, but that's pretty cool, man. I love it when we can, talk to people that were passionate about KISS or passionate about what they wanted to do, and they just went and did it. I really wanted to do my own book, and I never did. I'm such a lame-o. Anyway.
Even if I had the passion to do it, no way I could spend 2 years on it. Like, 2 minutes, and I lose my interest. So I don't know how you spend 2 years. Wow.
I get it. Don't forget, you can go to podcastrockcity.com. Check it out. We have all our shows on there. There's a player right on the front page. There's also a premium section. It's 99 cents a month for all kinds of free and extra stuff. Let's see. Podomatic. You can, if you follow us on Podomatic, it's a really cool thing because you can comment on our shows and stuff like that. And Jody, he gets back with everybody, don't you, Jody?
Try to.
Don't forget, Nashville Rock and Pod Expo is coming up next month. If you live around the area, man, somebody messaged me and told me that they're thinking about driving 12 hours to come and meet Jody and I.
Wow.
Man, if that happens, we're going to have a drink.
Totally.
It's like, you know, it's like, well, thank you for driving. All right, so listen, Jody, you got anything to add?
I always have to add, thanks for listening so much out there, folks.
Mr. Sunny?
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And I just got one quick thing. I wanted to thank everybody for the comments and the messages on Twitter and Facebook from the last episode. some of my friends sent me some personal texts. They included, I might have beat you. How can you not pick Deuce as Gene's best song? Jody asked the worst KISS albums. And worst KISS album covers, and you say Hotter Than Hell, you deserve to lose. first stupid thing you did was pick Eric Carr over Peter. Then how could you possibly say New York Groove was a great A solo, but didn't pick Rocket Right? I'm disowning you. And then the last one was best KISS album cover, and you say Dressed to Kill, Creatures of the Night. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Go back to listening to Hall & Oates and leave my band alone. So thanks a lot for everybody.
Damn.
That's the kind of stuff I had to listen to this week as being number two, so. Love the KISS Army, though.
That was vicious.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Well, leave my band alone. Yeah.
Leave my band alone. I didn't get any of that stuff. That's because I'm a winner.
Well, maybe sometime in the future we'll have a rematch and you can...
We gotta have a we absolutely will have a rematch. Well, thank you, Sonny. Don't let him knock you down, man. You're amazing.
and can you believe it? Ricky Bobby was right. If you ain't first, you're last. I guess that's true if there's only two people playing.
That's right. Second place is first loser. Ricky Bobby. Anyway, man, I had something I wanted to say. Okay, so listen, I'm going to Metallica now. That's why we're doing this show so early in the afternoon, which means, you know, I won't be listening to any Kiss, but I just got, somebody sent me a picture that's working security at the show, and they're showing the stage, and it looks amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, so you know what I'm going to say. We love Kiss podcasts, and we listen to them every week, and you're going to hear the commercials for all the ones that we listen to right after this show in 3, 2, 1, peace!
Peace! You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the Kiss Room. The Kiss Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world. Kiss! It's your place for all things Kiss and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The Kiss Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Greetings from Jandel Kiss Army. Strange Ways Podcast is having a rock and roll party, and you are invited. Right. Tune in and hang out with your Kiss Army bros where they celebrate and discuss the gods of thunder. Kiss. You can find the Earth versions on Podomatic, iTunes, Facebook, and Stitcher. Just Google us.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, and remember to eat it like a piece of cake.
History Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah. Oh, f- oh, f- Lee, come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine G with like a washed up bass. Boom, 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 boom,
boom. And serious.
No, wait.
Excuse me, Bob. You're gonna come over and do my album?
Kiss podcast on the web. History Science Theater. We bust balls because we can.
Hey everybody, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
And we're from the Decibel Geek Podcast. And if you love this...
then you'll love us.
That's right. Brand new episode every single Monday. You can find us on iTunes and at decibelgeek.com. And the best thing is, it's rock and roll and it's always free.
All right, Kiss Army. Since 2007, you've been getting Podkissed, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
That's right, it's your Podkissed. Every month, the Podkissed crew, along with the Kiss Room, brings you Kiss talk like no one else, whether it be roundtables, interviews with the band past and present, analysis, and great Kiss fun.
Hi, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to Podkissed.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Podkissed.
The Podkissed, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare at the moment, my dear. You'll have to come back. Thank you, and goodbye.